to Check It Out Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you to indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Glauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Copy Kitty and Dragon, a game about a dragon. Both games were recommended and provided to us by listener Brett Klein, who wanted us to play these games, and I told him that he'd go ahead and send them along to us. He was also the first person to send any images of him buying some Comrade swag, so this episode is dedicated to you, Brett.
Yeah, if you buy yourself a Comrade shirt and you want to send us a picture, we'll figure something out to do for you. That's nice.
Yeah,
we appreciate
game
that.
Codes, I got all sorts of stuff, so yeah. we'll do something.
Yeah, Steam makes us all wealthy.
Yeah.
In some ways, yeah. So we're talking about these two games, two very small indie games. One of them very recent. One of them actually a little bit old. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk first about Dragon, a game about a dragon.
Yeah.
Which is a RPG platformer.
Yeah.
That was made by Games with Dragon in.
Yeah.
Is the publisher. So, yeah, you know, you find your niche. And Nick, what is what's good about Dragon?
So Dragon is extremely whimsical and very much is an obvious labor of love, right? This definitely feels like, I assume, one person, based on how kind of singular aesthetic, singular kind of feel everything has. It's all crayon hand drawn, very like interesting look, and then it's got these kind of story beats in between gameplay moments that are kind of telling the story of a dragon going to rescue a princess, you know, trying to kind of flip the old archetype on its head. But the gameplay itself is actually not all that interesting.
Oh yeah, we'll get to that in just for 100%. Like the when we say it's like hand drawn and crayon drawn, like it looks like a coloring book. Like the paper quality is there actually.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it is like an animated coloring book, and that is the coolest thing about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got this kind of when you talk about the kind of charm and everything, you know, it comes like the text looks like it's written in crayon. There's like a little character sheet, you know, you can bring up when you get like stat allocation,
right,
kind of things.
Yeah, it makes it look like a whole RPG character sheet, even though there's only three things that you can change.
Yeah, but it still takes the kind of layout and stuff from a character, a D&D sheet.
Yeah,
and stuff, which is, that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very cute. It's a pretty bad game though.
Yeah, I'm definitely not feeling it too much in terms of what the actual moment-to-moment gameplay is, because it's a pretty standard platformer but really slow. There's no flow, no momentum to anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, it's kind of the key in just about any good platformer, is that sort of feel of momentum. You know, Mario and Sonic have it clearly.
Yeah, you have no weight. There's no weight.
Yeah,
there's no weight to anything.
There's no there's no way to you're getting that flow of momentum that is kind of the one thing that I need from a good platformer.
Yeah, game feel is what you're talking about. Like there's no good sense of kinesthetics.
Yeah, exactly.
It. Like it doesn't feel good in your hands. A lot of it is just that speed.
Mm-hmm.
Like you move painfully slow in this game. Like,
yeah.
And there's no real way to move faster. Your jumps are like super floaty, which like you can fly, you have a hover jump. But you can do like that kind of jump and not have it feel quite this floaty.
Right.
You know, like that's what Gargoyle's Quest does.
Or Luigi.
You
know, which is,
yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Or a princess, I guess.
Yeah.
Like does the literal, like the float, yeah. You know? So that's kind of the closest, and it's actually pretty similar to Gargoyle's Quest. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a pretty big influence.
Oh yeah,
on this, yeah, like that kind of RPG element, the overworld, going to these little short stages that don't always have a boss or anything.
Mm-hmm.
They're just sometimes just stretches of gameplay,
right?
It's more than just the game feel that is rough about it though. There are a lot of just kind of level design things that the game doesn't that are kind of universal truths that are
ignored,
you know. Yeah, just like totally ignored and eschewed. Like, so very early on, like third or fourth level, there are blind leaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you have to, yeah, we have to jump, and it's, you know, I was playing it, and I'm like, okay, like I get what's happening here. Like, one, I'm a little bit too zoomed in,
mm-hmm.
you know, to the action, but two, like this feels undesigned.
Yeah,
you know, like there's a hidden language to platformers that you can you can see, like, when you play something like, and the big example everyone brings up are the first level of either Mega Man X or Shovel Knight,
right?
Where it teaches you as you play, and it does it without tutorial stuff. And there's just, it's so subtle that you only notice when it's missing.
Right.
And to put, like, you know, every once in a while, like a late stage Mario or Sonic thing will have a blind jump that you have to make. But it's usually to find like a secret or there's some kind of clue, you know, so it's not totally blind. It just looks initially like a blind jump.
Right.
But here, like, it's right away. Like, oh, you jump to the right. If you don't jump far enough, there are just spikes that kill you at the bottom.
Yeah. I mean, you have the fly, which negates most of that. Like, I don't think I actually died from any of the blind jumps, but I don't like that they're there without any indication of what they no reason to do that for them to be blind jumps. They could zoom the camera out a little bit more, they could design the level to not to give you a hint of where you're jumping towards.
Yeah,
it just feels unthought of. There's nothing to it.
Exactly. Like kind of careless is how I would describe the level design in this game. It's like you can have that float, so you're not likely to actually just not make the jump.
Right.
But you have to know that you need to float, you know, to the right.
That's true.
You know, like, you could just jump and there's nothing. You don't know where you're headed.
Right.
You know, you don't have a goal at that point. You're just going to the right because it's a video game level. And that's there's a problem too with your fire breath and melee range. Your melee range is really, really, it's like realistic, but it's not like if you take something like, it's like a Zelda 1 little tiny dagger kind of thing. It's a little slash that kind of appears in front of you that has, kind of a weird hitbox.
But it gets you like one full distance of your character away from you, right?
Yeah.
That's how it hits. There can be a space of an entire you between you and the enemy, and it still be counted as melee range.
Yeah. Which is really weird because the animation, that's how Zelda works.
Yeah.
Here, that's not the case. You have your fire breath for that, which feels like it should have greater range.
Yeah.
Or be a projectile or something like that. Mm. It's just like, again, it just doesn't feel real good. I got to, I beat the first boss.
Yeah.
And this, I didn't play it for very long, which, like, cause I didn't like it.
I think that's about where I got to. I got past the first boss and maybe into the next level. And that's about it.
I hate that boss has, again, just in like game design, like communicating things to the player, that boss, he has a thing where he goes around and does, attacks that you have to learn the patterns and avoid, like any kind of side scrolling boss. Perfect. That's good. But he has like an exhaustion mechanic. Like, you're essentially waiting him out and dodging long enough for him to get winded.
Right.
He's only vulnerable then. So if you go up to him and attack him before that, it doesn't hurt him and he hurts you.
Yeah. It's just an instant hurt. There's no signifier that you can't hit him.
I don't
even
know what's happening.
Yeah.
Like, what is happening to hurt me there, and why did I not hurt him?
Right.
You know, and that's the kind of thing, again, that I think that in a game with a more kind of a author design or experience design just kind of gets communicated without even really thinking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, it's like, oh, this guy's got spikes on him, or he's got an energy shield or something like that. Like, I just get it. He's surrounded by electricity, so if I walk up to him while it's still there, I get shocked. There's ways to communicate that information to the player, but this game, when I was playing it, anything that happened like that felt like a surprise.
Yeah, nothing is very well communicated at all.
So it's just like, it's just a bummer, because like, there are things to like the actual story is pretty cute.
Mm-hmm.
The music's actually kind of good.
Yeah.
It's real goofy, like MIDI funk
right.
kind of stuff, but I ended up actually kind of liking it.
Yeah.
You know, but it just, it's like a real cart before the horse kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, the presentation is very cool, but that's about it.
Yeah. I certainly applaud it as a labor of love. And I mean, the dedication to the art style alone is like worthy of some praise. Like, how the hell did you spend all this time drawing all these backgrounds by hand?
Yeah, it looks really neat. Like, it does, you are playing a coloring book in a way that is really kind of fun.
But mechanically was not thought out nearly enough, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a bummer. Like, it's like, you know, had some potential, but did not dig it. More successful,
yes.
While still not being entirely successful, I think, is Copy Kitty.
Yeah. I think Copy Kitty is pretty cool. So this is another platformer. This one kind of feels a lot closer to a Mega Man style platformer. But the main cool mechanic of it, and where
so Nuclear Strawberry is the developer.
Just
to get that, came out August 11th, 2016, and is still in early access.
Mechanically, what the base mechanics and the name is based off of is that you when you kill enemies, they leave behind kind of their weapon, their whatever they use to attack you with, and you can pick up three different sorts of these weapons at once and switch between them at will. Mm-hmm. And then you also have an ability to fire a combination of all three, a sort of a mega fuck you to a room full of enemies. And based on what three different kind of weapons you have, they combine in different ways when you do that combining shot. Mm-hmm. So it kind of is reminiscent of an even more complex Kirby 64 style combining.
I think it's explicitly Gunstar Heroes.
Oh, really? Yeah, I don't think I played a lot of Gunstar Heroes. So
Gunstar Heroes has, like, you know, a set of like four, I think, different kind of weapons that, and you can combine all of them to make a kind of hybrids.
Yeah, that's really neat.
In a way that reminds me of this. And that part, like, when I said it was entirely successful, I think that part's super awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and also this game has really, really good game feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like moving around, jumping, you know, your kicks, everything feels really good.
Yeah.
You know, so like actually moving around, that little that mechanic of like catching enemies, combining their powers, kind of creating these things is really, really cool. And for as long as I played, so I played it for, you know, a couple hours. Again, yeah. I didn't beat this either.
Same. Yeah.
But I, you know, I played it for until I feel like I really got it. And they were still introducing like new kind of things, you know, like new powers, new iterations.
Yeah, it definitely seems like there's a lot here for people who are getting it and digging.
There's
it.
Tons of content. Yeah. Like there are a lot of levels as well. Where this like falls down, and even like the story stuff, like it would be, you know, I would be a stereotype of myself, or you would be forgiven for thinking that I would dislike this because it's about an anime cat girl doing anime shit. And like that's, you know, the theming is not my favorite, but I don't hate it.
Yeah,
either.
It's fine. Like, yeah, I don't it's know. Fine. It's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me. The thing that made me not want to stick with it though is that every like stage is like the smash all the targets stage in Smash Brothers.
Yeah, everything is about just killing all the enemies in the stage to move on to the next one.
Like, and the stages are not, there's no sense of place. There are these virtual worlds. So they're just kind of like sets of platforms and corners. And like, again, it has that feeling of like the levels not being very designed. You know, they're just like little arenas to hunt down all the things.
You know, what I think, so what occurred to me most while playing this game was that I'd much rather be watching a speedrun of it.
Oh yeah, that would be pretty neat, because there probably are some, you know, pretty cool tricks.
Yeah, exactly. Like because it's this, you know, all map layout that's kind of not very directional, right? It's just a big room of corridors and stuff to go get to every corner of and kill all the enemies from. You kind of have to have a route out to do it quickly. Otherwise, you're just kind of mindlessly exploring it in order to find all the targets. So I think that this game would be really cool to watch someone skilled at, who's done all the routing, knows where everything's at, and knows the best ways to combine all the powers and stuff to complete things quickly and efficiently.
I think that'd be neat. I would definitely watch it. I think that I would play it more if it was like a more traditional platformer.
Yeah, me too.
Like, give me like a level that just goes to the right and still give me this cool power set, you know, but like, I would much rather just kind of be doing platforming than kind of this, like, it feels like a bonus level in a different game.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, every four levels you have to complete, you know, kill all the enemies in a certain amount of time to get all the coins.
Yeah.
And it just, there's just not enough variety. Like, it just keeps happening over and over and over. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, and the art style for this is good too. I guess like if there's a thesis to this episode or something that's like a commonality is like in these games, there's, you know, kind of an art style, there's a level design, and there's kind of character control and concept as like three big things in a platform. And like this has two of the three, and Dragon had one of the three.
Right.
But this still doesn't have levels that I'm very interested in.
Right.
The exception to that, like the bosses I think are pretty great.
The bosses are neat. And they're, yeah, everything is really cool looking. I mean, you said this for a second, but it's like, it's got a cool aesthetic that I feel like is mostly in shmups. Like it's just a bunch of particle effects. And
yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and bloom everywhere. And it's neat. Like it looks really good in this game, especially with the kind of, you know, technical digital world theme that it has going. It looks cool. I enjoy the aesthetic of it. It's nice.
It's really empowering because like you do things, you know, you can put in just a little bit of effort to combine things and have a huge, huge reaction.
Yeah.
You know, that looks really, really good. I could see that becoming a problem later in the game as the game got more difficult, because you can lose track of where your character is.
Yeah, lose track of your character, lose track of what you're on, which weapons you have in which slots. It can definitely, there's a lot to be thinking about in order to, once the difficulty gets bumped up in this game, I would lose my shit completely. It's going to go way over my head real fast.
Which is like one of those things where I want, you know, it's like a cool aesthetic that doesn't quite scale.
Yeah.
You know, but that, that whole problem would be helped by more traditional levels, I think, with like, you know, like part of the reason, one of the big things of level design is not just it being interesting to navigate through, but by making it interesting to navigate through or have a sense of place or anything like that, you memorize it more.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so like it moving to the right on the first stage of Super Mario Brothers, like I could draw that right now on a piece of paper. There's things to point out, like, oh, here's the two pipes with the one up in between them and the Goomba walking back and forth. Yep. And here's the gap, and here's the set of four question mark box with a star at the top. Like, there's things to point out. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to point out here. Like, I could never describe a part of a level in this game.
You'd have to all describe it in based on like the corners. Like, this is the upper left corner of the map, and from there, if you go right, like it's kind of just
they're like mazes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And like, so there's just nothing to hang your brain on. So, you know, I can't get a good, like, that plays into my sense of positioning. Like, if things are going just crazy on the screen, like, I don't really, like, going one way feels as good as going any other way. Mm-hmm. And you can see kind of the developer kind of like patching over that, because they give you little arrows to point where all the enemies are off screen. You wouldn't have to do that in a more explorable space.
Yeah.
Like, I would explore it because I've been like, oh, I know I've been here because here's the broken vending machine and here's the, you know, TV monitor in the background, and this is where I got this power up.
Right.
You know, I would have a sense of knowing a level. It's impossible to know a level in Copy Kitty. And I think that the idea is that it's supposed to just have that arcade action, like you shouldn't want to.
Right.
But that didn't quite work for me. Like, it was fun to explore my character, but I got pretty bored using a platformer moveset to essentially play levels that are like arena shoot 'em ups.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's a very good way of putting that.
It's very cool. Like, it is really cool. The bosses are good. The enemy designs are good. Like, it's really impressive. Mm-hmm. And the core of what they have here is really, really awesome. But it's like maybe, and it's so far developed and there's so many levels that I can't imagine this changing. I think this is intentional. Right. The developer wants it to be that kind of hit all the targets in Smash Brothers.
And for all we know, that's something that people are looking for, you know?
Oh, totally.
Even like, if this you might and I be, don't give a shit.
Yeah, people might be just like into that and not want there to be levels, but like this makes me want like a Copy Kitty 2 that's like a, you know, not like a Metroidvania. You can still have that arcade action, still be stages, still have your power-ups dependent on the enemies that are in the room rather than like exploration. Mm. But just giving me like a sense of like where I'm at in space makes a big difference, I think.
Yeah.
Really glad I played it. Like it's fun, you know, like picking up and feels good in your hands. Like it is fun to play.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely didn't grab me, and it's not something I'm going to be playing any more of after the show, I don't think.
Yeah.
You know, I think that immediately, too, the feel of a platformer that's like, for some reason, the Mega Man-style platformer never really gets to me. And I don't know what it is about me. A lot of people really love Mega Man series, but this is really reminiscent in terms of actual like feel in your hands of controlling your character of a Mega Man X game. Mm-hmm. And immediately, I'm like, okay, well, so I'm not grabbed by that.
Yeah, there's a certain kind of like a certain expression of physics in games that kind of feels Mega Man-y.
Yeah.
And like, I love Mega Man. Like, I love all of those games.
A lot of people do, and it's just me. Yeah. Like, there's just something about me that those don't click with, and I'm not sure what it is.
No, I mean, I get it. It's not like, you know, nothing's for everybody.
Right.
Those work for me, and this game still wasn't something I wanted to like keep going with.
Yeah, totally.
Even though, again, I'm glad I played it, and like, I feel like there's totally room for improvement in turning this into the game that I want it to be. But thanks, Brett.
Yeah, thank
you. I hope you don't feel like shitty about us, you know, not particularly liking the games that you suggested. It wasn't personal or anything.
Yeah, and you definitely shouldn't. Like, we're very, very glad that you put these in front of us to play, and hope you enjoyed hearing our thoughts about them. Mm-hmm. So since we're running a little bit shorter on this one, I'm gonna go ahead and talk a little bit about Shenzhen IO. Shenzhen IO is a new game from Zachtronix, the people who made TIS 100, the last game that I didn't even bother to try and get Gary to play before we reviewed. Mm-hmm. because this game is pretty much TIS 102. I also would not suggest Gary ever try it because it is a Nick game to the max. Mm-hmm. So Shenzhen IO is really cool. It takes the TIS 100 assembly mechanics and introduces a new layer on top of that with a microcontroller. So you have to actually like lay out a series of microcontrollers, connect them up with traces on a circuit board, and then inside those microcontrollers you write your code and then pass, you know, input into one microcontroller, do some effect on it with the code, pass it to another one to further on, and combine in various ways to produce the result you're trying to create. Mm-hmm. So very similar to TIS-100, but with a whole extra layer on top of it and a whole lot of polish that TIS-100 completely ignored, because I believe this is a full Zachtronics team game. TIS-100 was kind of a Zach personal project while people were working on Infinite Factory. So so yeah, it's highly recommended for me. If you liked any of Zachtronics' previous games, you probably already know about it, but might as well bring it up here anyway. But the real coolest thing, and unfortunately, I don't know if this is going to be anything that Zach does any more of, but as a pre-order collector's edition special thing, he sent a binder that has the manual printed out in it. And the binder looks exactly like, I'm looking at it right now, looks exactly like an old 80s computer technical reference would be. There's no actual branding of Zachtronics or the game at all. It's all the company that you're working for in lore, in Shenzhen, China. And it's all kind of separated out with these tabs, and it's very, very nice, but very technical. But the coolest thing, and I'm really excited to get to this point in the game, I haven't been able to get there yet, but there's an envelope in this that says, says do not open until instructed. And Zach has kind of clued on Twitter just to say, do not open that envelope. The game will tell you when.
Mm-hmm.
And that's,
yeah, that's really neat.
That's neat shit. I don't know what it is. It's going to be cool, hopefully. But yeah, that, I'm really excited that that was a neat way to handle a game for a very small player base, to do a special physical copy of. It's just a binder of the rules and the code of the game. Real neat Chotsky to have around.
Yeah, it's you talked to me about the kind of feelies part of it, which I think is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like that part I dig, and I just wish that was like, boy, do that for Wasteland 3.
Yeah.
You know, make that a fake old game.
Yeah.
So I can buy all the cool shit that comes with it and give me a pouch that like those legacy board game mechanics and in my video game.
Yeah, give me physical stuff in lore and I'll always love it.
Yeah, that's the best. And that's, you know, that's everything is moving that way, just because it is that's going to get people to actually buy physical things.
Yeah.
You know, you're doing feelies and stuff. It's like the same logic behind the push for 3D movies. Like, do something that people can't do at home.
Yeah.
Do something that somebody can't just download on Steam, you know.
Yeah, but I like physical stuff that's like, you know, just cute Chotskys, like a figurine or, you know, patches or whatever. But stuff that's actually in lore is a whole other step beyond, like, oh, shit.
Well, the crazy thing, and something I've talked about a bunch, is that, like, that used to be just kind of... So, obviously, that was true of, like, old Infocom text adventure games.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like, but the weird thing that people don't always remember is that, like, that used to just kind of be the standard in general. Like the Maniac Mansion NES game has a poster of a bulletin board from like the game world.
That's awesome.
That's really, really cool. Like it has like hints and stuff, but they're really oblique. It's just like saying what's going on in the world. Or the manual for Fallout 1 is written as a Wastelander's guide.
See,
like
yeah.
It's written in character and has like a voice and stuff. And it's, you know, there's still screenshots and stuff in
right.
it, but everything is written in this character's voice.
Yeah, that trend needs to come back in a big bad way.
I love it so much. Like it is, it's like pretty much my favorite thing. Like those kind of like old manuals and old little like, again, in-game artifacts. Like I've bought a bunch of on eBay, you know, I've got my little Fallout collectibles thing on my shelf there, and like a bunch of people on eBay just made, you know, bottle caps and made a little
Mentats
case and things like
exactly
that.
I want a Mentats case for sure.
Yeah, like that stuff I'm just like way into it. I've got the when Bioshock 2 came out, they made a replica of the little doll Big Daddy that mm-hmm. the little sisters wear.
Yeah.
That's like made out of a baseball and a corkscrew and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and they made one of those. And it's just like a little toy, like it's a little doll,
right?
Essentially, made, but it's actually a real baseball, like it's made of all those things.
That's awesome.
And like I'm way into that, which is like actually the thing that they fucked around with in the game, than I would be, you know, a poster
mm-hmm.
or, you know, something like that. It just says like Bioshock 2. Like I wouldn't put up I wouldn't wear a Bioshock 2 t-shirt, but I might wear, you know, a Fort Frolic t-shirt, like that
yeah.
kind of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
So that kind of that's a really important aesthetic kind of thing to me. And like that's the shitty thing about when you go to cons and you go to things is like free t-shirts are always just the name
of the game. Yeah.
So you walk around, you see somebody who's like, I'm wearing a Gears of War 2 shirt. It's like, Well, like, I can't imagine liking a game enough just to have a shirt that just has the name of the game on the front.
Yeah.
It's just very weird to me.
Totally.
Yeah. Runs into all the time with Dark Souls, too, where it's like Dark Souls marketing and stuff. Like, it's very rarely things from the game. Like, yeah. If it was just like, I would wear a shirt, I'd be more likely to wear a shirt that was just like one of the Covenant symbols or something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, as opposed to, you know, like one, the really, really egregious get good shit. But then also just, you know, a picture of a bonfire and a guy, like, that's not so bad, but I wish it was something more like, I guess, symbols and the like. Like, I like logos and symbols.
Yeah, there's so much story to those games and so much that you want to celebrate as a character in the game. Mm-hmm. I like it when they bring those things to real life instead of just giving me the branding and logos and shit.
Me too, because branding is awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for listening.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you found that game, even if I didn't play it. Like, I'm, you know,
yeah.
I'm glad you found something made for you. You found a hole made for
you. It's very much a hole made for me. Yeah.
If you like this show, the best way to support the network is to go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And we recently just made a bunch of changes to our Patreon tiers.
Yeah.
So you can find that information there. We recently got it to a new stretch goal, which allows us to do Days of Future Cast, the show about the X-Men animated series.
Oh yeah.
I'm doing with Jeremy Greer. But we're, you know, made some progress towards that next goal, and we, you know, we're in the Empire Building business. We want to keep this up. So you know, we really do appreciate your outreach. If you can't afford that, what can they do, Nick?
Well, you can also come hang out with us on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or twitter.com or at Comrade Podcast on Twitter. And you can always send any suggestions or anything you have on the contact form at duckfeed.tv/contact. And rating reviews on iTunes, of course, are always a big help to help spread the message of the game or just tell your friends about it.
Mm-hmm.
Weekend after, as of the weekend this episode is being put out, we are going to be at Portland Retro Game Expo.
Absolutely. Yeah, me and Nick will both be at the bench, or at the bench, at the booth.
Yeah. Yep, along with Cole, we'll all be hanging out. Watch out for Fireball's booth, where you can come hang out with us, please. If you're a fan of the show or any of the shows on the network, come say hi to us. Doesn't matter what we're doing. You're the reason why we're there. We want to say hi to you guys. So if you're in the Pacific Northwest.
Approach us in the bathroom. Yeah. That's what Nick's saying. That's coded language.
Yeah.
Come behind him, behind his peeing.
Tap your foot underneath the divider and I'll know what that means.
Yeah.
But if you're in the Pacific Northwest or Portland or anywhere nearby, come check us out. It's a cheap little con. It's a lot of fun. And we'd like to say hi to you.
Yeah. There's a Watch Out for Fireballs meetup that weekend on that Saturday at 7 p.m. at Quarter World on Hawthorne. So head out, and that's where we'll be hanging out. So for the meetup. So come hang out with us at the meetup.
Yeah, for sure.
Play some arcade games and eat some snacks and the like.
Totally.
We'd love to see you.
Yeah. So I think that's about it. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Good night.